Chapter 5.
I wonder which dragon you are set to tame,
Ali pondered aloud as she moved through the corridors beside Baratu, Jonas, and me.
Tyrion's mother, perhaps? Or maybe another one of the adolescent ones?
I hope it's a full-grown dragon. As great as it's been to have Tyrion and Swaer and George, a full-grown dragon that's bonded to one of our friends would be a game-changer.
We do have a full-grown dragon now, Jonas reminded me. Judging by my calculations, Huwar has been around for several thousand season cycles.
That's true, but he doesn't have any sort of dragon bond. He seems to be able to communicate with Zamwe and the other dragons non-verbally, but that presents a lot more risks than a dragon bond does. Every single person who shares their bond with a dragon can see into their mind and know what they're thinking, so they're on the same page. I can't tell you how many times Mira, Gemma, and I have gotten out of tricky situations because we could silently communicate with our dragons. With Huwar, it's a lot riskier. Also, stealth is kind of off the table when you have a frickin' brontosaurus lumbering around everywhere.
I understand what you are saying, Draco Rex. Though that would be the case with any full-sized dragon you would have. Do you really think Tyrion's mother or the rotund dragon would lend themselves to stealth?
Probably not. But they would do great in battle. Especially whenever we finally decided to go after the orcs' homeland. In that case, we need all the firepower we can get.
Why would you even need stealth if you had a full-sized dragon?
Ali questioned.
I would think it would make your journeys much, much simpler if you had a creature that could take down half an army on its own.
It's a double-edged sword. I sighed. But then I realized I needed to change my phrasing when both of the dragonkin looked at me funny. That means there's both good and bad things about it. Sure, we could wipe out hordes of orcs or enemies with one good fire breath, but we'd also have a giant flying target hovering above our heads at all times. Our enemies would see us coming before we were even close, and then they'd have enough time to properly prepare a counter-assault. Not to mention the fact that apparently the orcs have some dragons of their own. If they get word we have bigger and badder dragons, each and every encounter with these guys could end up in a giant frickin' Godzilla-style battle, and we don't need that.
So, what is the plan then, Draco Rex? Do you really intend for our crewmates to bond with all these dragons, and then we just leave them here on the island while you continue to search?
Maybe? I shrugged. I definitely plan to have the dragons come along in our journeys, but only when we think there might be a bigger threat lurking out there.
We're going to run out of room on this island very quickly.
Food, too,
Ali noted.
We have quite a population of wild boars in our land, but not enough to feed the army of dragons we eventually hope to have.
Eventually have?
Baratu scoffed.
Have you ever seen a land dragon eat before? They'll swallow a wide horn whole and then go back for a second helping.
Shit. They had a really good point. For the longest time, we only had George, Nixie, and their children to feed. Then we brought in Tyrion, who was smaller than the rest of the dragons and could hunt for himself. But now, just on this last journey alone, we brought back two more dragon mouths to feed. So while Air may have been small right now, but I'd seen firsthand just how large these guys could grow to be. Then there was Huwar, who was larger than any of the dragons we had in our crew and was used to eating giant, fatty creatures like the Whitehorns. For the most part, the only good meat we had on this island came from boars and chickens, and it took probably six of those to equal out a single Widehorn from the Chero Island. And we were hopefully about to bring another large beast into the mix. Ah, fucking hell. You're right. We need to find a new food source or else we could be looking at a famine very quickly.
Could we increase the production of vegetables in our gardens? We have plenty of seeds.
Dragons don't eat vegetables, I'm afraid. I'm sorry to be the one to point out such a predicament, Draco Rex, but this is something our king must be aware of.
We need to start mobilizing our people better. We're going to need new living quarters built on the castle, and we'll need to increase the parties that we send out to hunt and fish each day. Zakiyu would be the perfect woman for this job, actually.
Ah, yes. She could easily figure out the best way to mobilize our people, particularly when you are not around.
Exactly. I chuckled, though I was still nervous. I trusted Zakiyu to run things, no problem, but the solution I proposed was just a band-aid. If we started to bring back more and more people and dragons to our island, the situation was going to just get even more dire. As much as I hated to think about it, we may eventually be forced to move away from our beautiful home. I hated the thought as much as anyone. This was the island where it all began, the one where I found my first true loves, where my children were born and had lived the entirety of their lives. This was the only island so far that I felt was truly safe from those bastard orcs, mostly thanks to the fortifications we'd made and the dragonkin's familiarity with the territory.
What about hairy berries?
Baratu finally suggested.
There are plenty of those back on our island, and just one of them can keep a dragon's belly full for a whole day.
Not a bad idea. But that's not very viable either, We'd have to have them shipped from your island at a constant rate, which means tying up one of our two ships and an entire crew's worth of people pretty much constantly. Then there's the fact we'd be taking away resources from the Chero women still back on the island. Not to mention the fact they were really, really hard to find when we were there.
I know it's not ideal,
the blonde rhino woman shrugged.
I just wanted to make a suggestion that might or might not work.
I appreciate it either way. I think I'm just going to have to brainstorm this one for a little bit. I don't want to make any rash decisions, especially not without consulting the rest of our people first. Jonas led the four of us out of the castle and out into the jungle, down the pathway that took us to the more recreational beach to the south of the palace. When we finally arrived, I saw many of my friends and family as they relaxed on the shores. My eldest, Mirella, sat atop a flat boulder with her legs crossed in front of her body and her hands placed firmly onto her knees. Her eyes were closed as she meditated, and her braided raven hair fluttered softly in the wind. My daughter's amethyst-colored scales radiated the sun onto the sand in small, kaleidoscope-like patterns as she continued to look into the future. I'd only been away for a few days, but it felt like she'd grown a full year while I was gone. Mirella now looked like she was nearly as tall as her mother, and equally as beautiful. Meanwhile, Eric, the Princeps Draco, was down closer to the water. He had his infant sister, Mir, atop his shoulders, and they both cackled with glee as Eric bounded down the shoreline as quickly as his awkward teenage legs would take him. The twins, Lizzie and Amaria, were off to the right with their mother, Sella, and I watched with amusement as the Dragonkin warrior led the girls in some sort of karate-like exercises, using a spear whose point had been removed for safety. It was adorable to watch the two little girls as they followed their mother in her
"Hi-ya!"
and cries of determination. But their frail imitations were nothing short of heartwarming. Lizzie and Amaria had their eyebrows furrowed in a serious fashion, complete with Sella's trademark scowl plastered across their faces. It was enough to melt even the coldest of hearts. Oshuna and Kareen stood next to each other a few more feet down the beach from Sella and her kids, and my beautiful pink-haired dragonkin mate stared at our daughter lovingly as the toddler skipped rocks out into the sea. Every now and again, Kareen herself would toss a stone out against the waves, and then the two would laugh when it sunk before even the first skip. Even further down the line was one happy family of water dragons. The two adolescent beasts, Malky and Saren, frolicked around about 100 feet out in the ocean. They ducked and dived beneath the waves as they created several large wakes, but they seemed like they were having a blast. Swaer floated above the two little water dragons, and he chased them with the intensity of a cat chasing a mouse as he shot down tiny puffs of his wind breath onto their position. Meanwhile, George and Nixie laid on the beach in a large heap on top of each other. Their gentle eyes flitted back and forth between their children and each other, and their necks were intertwined in a loving embrace. How could I ever even think of asking anyone to leave this place? There seemed to be a meeting of the queens going on as well. There was a small circle of wooden stools spread across the beach, and royalty adorned each one. Queen Nerissa sat next to Queen Dalwin, and next to them was the Queen Mother of Chero people, Batari. Nadir was part of the group as well, though she looked out of place with her pregnant belly and furry tail that whipped back and forth like an excited cat. Ainsley was the only leader I saw who was missing, but that was with good reason. She was surely still back in the infirmary with Algan. Whatever was going on right now with our child was way more important. We took a small detour to approach the circle of queens first. All of the royal women were laughing heartily as they chatted, but then they grew somewhat silent when they saw us approaching. Ladies? I chuckled and held up my hands. Don't stop talking on account of me. Unless you were talking about me, of course. Then you must cease immediately.
I confess,
the yellow-haired Dalwin said with a sly grin.
We were talking about you. Only good things, though. Indeed,
Nerissa nodded.
I was explaining to them what it's like to have a royal child, since all of them will soon have their own.
Is it a shame Ainsley couldn't be here? She's the one who needs the advice the most right now.
You're not far behind her,
Batari mused as she pointed at the raccoon woman's round stomach.
I'm not very familiar with how pregnancy works, but it looks like that baby's ready to pop out any minute now.
Within the next moon cycle.
Nadir held her head high as she patted her baby bump.
There will be a little Kunak child running around this island, causing absolutely all the chaos they can. Actually, there will be two. Lezand got pregnant at the same time as me, so there will be two furry little creatures tearing up the palace. I hope the caretakers are ready for such madness.
Gods, I hope so. They've all been instructed as to the chaotic nature of the Kunag people, but what exactly do they need to be prepared for? Oh, you know.
Nadir trailed off with a devilish grin.
Lots of mischief, loud noises as they are literally bouncing off the walls. Oh, and be sure to hide anything, fabric, wood, or thatch that might be of value. I swear, Kunag child's claws are the sharpest thing in all of existence, and they use them at all times when they are first developing.
That's everything we own.
Marissa's eyes went wide.
Our entire world is made out of wood and thatch.
I guess you better have eyes on them the whole time, then.
Nadir shrugged.
Even then, something is bound to get destroyed. Those sorts of things just happen when a Kunag kid is around.
Why can't you watch them yourself?
Marissa questioned.
Well, I could.
The raven-haired raccoon woman chuckled.
But a ship traveling around a dangerous island full of deadly creatures and killer orcs isn't really the place for a child, is it?
I assure you, Narissa,
Dalwin interjected with pursed lips and a raised finger.
Our morpho children will not be quite so destructive. In fact, they mostly just keep to themselves for the first short cycle of their lives. The most noise you'll hear out of them is their delicate laughter as they chase after an insect or a scuttling scaly creature. After that, they wrap themselves up in a cocoon, hibernate for a full season, and then emerge as a full-grown adult.
That sounds much easier,
Narissa admitted, before she looked at Batari.
What about your kind, Batari? Is there anything I should know about Cheryl children?
I noticed Batari and Baratu both tensed up at the Dragonkin Queen's words, so I stepped in before they had to make the awkward explanation. There has never been a Chero child before. I spelled it out for my beautiful lover. Batari and Zikiyu will have the first.
Never?
Narissa raised an eyebrow. Batari opened her mouth to elaborate, but I cut her off with a reassuring wink. They were created by the god Tembori in the image of the Lord of the Underworld. He wanted their sole existence to be protecting the dragons on their island, so he didn't create any males whatsoever.
Fascinating.
The silver-haired dragonkin woman nodded and then leaned forward on her chair.
So, Ben was the first male you've ever seen.
Well, him and Jonas here, but the Draco Rex is the only male we've ever known.
Intimately. How strange,
Dalwin noted.
Though your god has blessed you with these children, so it must be by his design.
It is. And I, for one, cannot wait to meet our child. He and Swire are going to be the best of friends.
I can't wait to meet him either. I sighed as I wrapped my arms around Batari's neck from behind and nuzzled my nose against her snowy locks. Or her. I'll be happy with either.
I must admit, the thought of having the very first Chero male sounds wonderful.
As long as it's healthy and happy, that's all I care about. But, yeah, it would definitely be cool for one of you to have the first Chero boy. Then again, if you don't, it just gives us more reason to try again.
I will warn you, though,
Narissa mused as she looked down the beach at our two children.
Boys are much, much harder to handle. Just ask Ben about Eric.
He hasn't been that difficult. I waved my hand in dismissal. He's got a lot of personality, that's all.
Is that what you call it? Personality.
Okay, I'll admit it. Mirella has been much simpler in terms of independence. Like, look at her over there. She's literally just chilling out on a rock at complete peace while there is nothing but screaming children around her. Eric, on the other hand, always wants to be right there in the action. Then there are the twins who literally want to follow Sella around all the time and act just like her. They all have their quirks, but they're all still a blessing in a different way.
That is the truth.
Narissa nodded firmly with a huge smile.
And I am sure the rest of your children will be equally as precious.
I'm going to go talk to Mirella for a few minutes. I announced to the Circle of Queens.
Good.
Nadir winked.
That means we can start talking about you again.
I just rolled my eyes and then slowly strode down the beach toward my daughter. Jonas tagged along, though Baratu and Hallie hung back with the rest of my friends.
Hello, Father.
Mirella muttered, while we were both still 5 feet behind her.
Hello, Jonas.
Hello, my little amethyst. I smiled as I approached my beloved child. How did you know that was Jonas and me walking up behind you? Did your visions let you know?
That's not how it works, Dad.
The dark-haired teenager chuckled, though she still didn't open her eyes.
Jonas taught me that if I want to allow the spirits from beyond to guide me, I need to turn off some of my senses and truly focus. Like right now, I'm closing my eyes, and I was trying not to speak. When I do that, it heightens all the other elements of my being.
Which means... I trailed off, still not following.
It means I could hear you both talking from all the way down here. You literally told Queen Narissa you were coming down to talk to me. As for Jonas, I just assumed he would come down as well.
So you took a lucky guess. Is that all soothsaying is? Because if so, that's about as accurate as the meteorologist back in my world.
I'm guessing that's supposed to be a jab, Father?
Morella finally opened one of her purple eyes and shot me a disapproving look.
The joke is on you, though. You never taught me what a meteorologist is.
Touché, Morella. Touché. So, Jonas told me you had another vision.
I did.
My daughter nodded.
The gods have not guided me quite as clearly as I had hoped, though. I saw a vision of you with your hand on the belly of a dragon, almost as if you were trying to calm it down. Jonas and Nadir were there too, though you all were surrounded by darkness.
That seems ominous. But that's at least a starting point. Did you have any other visions during your meditation?
I did. I also saw you and Tyrion flying over a landscape that I couldn't believe actually existed. It had lots of large plants and foliage on the ground, but no trees whatsoever. And strangely enough, everything was glowing.
Glowing plants? Are you sure the gods aren't just leading you on? It's not as unheard of as you think, Jonas interjected.
Back in the days of my youth, dragonkin sailors who went out to sea told the tales of an island that glowed on the horizon.
I thought you guys didn't have large vessels before we stole them from the orcs, I questioned with a raised eyebrow. How were your elders going out to sea?
Oh, on the backs of their dragons, of course. You must remember, we have not had a full-sized water dragon since the first orc invasion. George and Nixie are both quite large, but they are still growing. With a full-grown water dragon and a bit of bravery, a dragonkin could theoretically travel around the entire ocean.
So they found an island that glows, huh? I questioned, as I stroked my chin and looked to the horizon. Do you remember where they claimed it was? I've never seen it from our island.
It is to the north of these lands. Perhaps the map we stole from the orcs might give us a better sense of direction.
The map? That's right. If we could at least see what islands were up in that general vicinity, it would give us a starting point. I was also going to need a crew to come with me on this journey. And for that, I needed to round up everyone and see who wanted to volunteer. Now the only question was, how did I get a bunch of people together in a short period of time? Eric. I couldn't help but smile as I ran over to my son and Mir, and then halted right in the boy's pathway.
Heads up, Dad!
Eric declared in a fake, panicked voice.
Oh no, Mir! We're going to crash into Dad! Oh!
I widened my eyes and looked right and left repeatedly as I pretended to be concerned. The toddler on Eric's shoulders laughed up a storm as they ran toward me. But thankfully, Eric was able to slow his gait to a dull trot. My son proceeded to run into me gently, and for comedic effect I threw out my arms, stumbled backward, and then plopped down into the water. Mir went hysterical when she saw me fall, and the sound of her whimsical laughter was enough to make me forget all our troubles, even if only for a second. Sure, my ass was now soaked from falling into the somewhat frigid water, but it was all worth it to hear my daughter laugh.
Wow, you guys were going really fast there. It's a good thing you slowed down or you might have just taken my upper half off.
I'm carrying precious cargo,
Eric teased as he pulled his sister from his shoulders and held her in his arms like a baby. Mir giggled as her brother proceeded to tickle her belly, and I just watched the series of events as a proud father.
Well, Dragon Prince, I've got an even more precious task for you if you're up to it.
Eric's demeanor shifted instantly from playful brother to stoic royalty when he heard my words. He forced himself to stand up straight, cleared his throat, and removed all emotion from his eyes.
Whatever you want, Father,
he said in a voice that was comically deeper than his regular one.
Just tell me what you want me to do.
I want you to run back to the castle and tell everyone to meet me down here. All of the Chero, all of the Kunag, all of the Morphos, everybody you think could possibly want to go on a long journey with your dad here. And make sure Isla brings her map.
Right away, Father.
Eric's eyes narrowed as he gave me a firm nod.
Come on, Mia. Ready to play Water Dragon again?
My infant daughter let out a shrill cry of excitement as Eric placed her back atop his shoulders. Then the Dragon Prince attempted to mimic the sound of dragon hum as he dug his feet into the sand and charged up his legs. The next thing I knew, Eric took off up the shoreline as his little sister flailed her arms wildly above her head.
Eric, be careful!
I heard Nerissa cry out as her children passed.
Your sister is still quite small!
Eric slowed his pace for a few seconds, until he was out of Nerissa's sight. Of course, the second he thought he was home free, he took off like a bat out of hell again. Eric! I warned the child via our mutual dragon bond. Listen to your mother.
Fine.
The preteen boy harumphed back telepathically, and then I saw his figure slow down. I remained down on the beach while Eric went and gathered up the rest of my crew, and I turned and looked out to the watery horizon as I took in the pure serenity of the landscape. It was still fairly early in the day, so the sun was high in the crystal blue sky as its rays beat down on the water. I could feel the heat of the day on my forehead as I stared off into the distance and watched the waves crash against each other out in the deep blue sea. Occasionally, I saw a strange aquatic creature or two spring out from beneath the surface and then disappear, never to be seen again. Of course, whether or not they had just swam away or gotten eaten by something far larger was a complete unknown.
Even back on my days as a coast guardsman, the prospect of the ocean seemed scary as hell. It was this big liquid mass that covered the majority of the globe, and it was so vast and deep, there were millions of miles that had yet to be explored. Then there was the fact that just falling into the water put you at risk of getting gobbled up by one of the many deadly creatures that dwelled beneath the surface. In this world, of course, there seemed to be even more of those deadly creatures. Needless to say, I had great respect for the dragonkin men Jonas had talked about. I trusted George with my life, but even then, I didn't think I would have felt safe with just him and I out on an endless ocean. All my thoughts and concerns dissipated when I heard the sound of loud, thundering footsteps in the sand behind me. I whipped my head around to see Zamway riding atop Huwar, and the pair was followed by the rest of the Chero women. At the same time, I saw a small, beautiful wave of technicolor coming toward me from the sky. The butterfly women fluttered through the air on their delicate wings, landed on the shore next to the circle of queens, and proceeded to beat their wings softly with excitement. The Kunag women, Dragonkin, and Nerolopes all took a much less elegant approach, though they were right behind the other two groups. Soon, I had everybody I needed right here, and I whistled to everyone on the beach as I made a motion for them to gather around me. My friends obliged, and within minutes, everyone was present. "All right, everybody," I announced, as I tried to get their attention. "Here's the lowdown. Morella had a vision that one of our escapee fire dragons is on an island that glows. Apparently Jonas has confirmed the story and says the elders always used to say they used to see a similar island during their travels. Isla, I was hoping your map could at least get us started down the right path."
"A glowing island?"
The beautiful Kandara spoke up.
"The Morpho men used to talk about that all the time.
They told us it was the most beautiful sight in the world."
The orange-haired Awara grumbled.
"Of course, I always thought it was just one of their feeble attempts to try and woo us.
I've heard of creatures that light up in the dark, though they mostly live in the depths of the ocean or deep inside of the lakes on our island. They glow like they're engulfed in light, even though there's nothing around them whatsoever."
"Wait, you're talking about bioluminescence?" "Of course." I hadn't heard the term since back when I was in freshman biology, but it stuck in my head quite clearly.
"What does that have to do with anything?"
Nerissa questioned.
"So we know the correct word to use when talking about this island. How does that truly help us?"
"Because," I said with a smile, "things are generally bioluminescent when there aren't natural light sources around. Kind of like the places Kandara was just explaining.
Which means all we have to do is figure out which island on this map would be completely devoid of sun,"
the blue-haired butterfly woman, Elzara, declared.
"It doesn't even have to be completely devoid of sunlight,"
Kandara added.
"It would just need to be a place that doesn't get much light, like an island that was constantly covered with clouds or overshadowed by mountains."
The one-eyed dragonkin historian, Isla, held out a parchment scroll before her and then unfurled it in a hurry. Once it was open, she studied the map with a narrowed eye and curious brow. Soon, Isla's eye lit up, and an adorable smile spread across her lips.
"This might be the one,"
she declared, as she turned the scroll to face me.
"You see, this one right here. The orcs seem to have left a note about it."
Sure enough, when I looked closer, there was an island to the north of our own with the word empty scribbled over it, with the handwriting of a drunken 3-year-old. Definitely the orcs, all right. "Okay, so it's an empty island. So what?"
"If they think the island is empty, then that means they didn't find any villagers on it,"
Sela explained.
"Which also means there were no signs of civilization."
"Didn't you say the landscape was desolate?" I asked Morella. "In your vision."
"Kind of."
The teenage soothsayer shrugged.
"There were lots lots of glowing plants, but that's all I could see.
There's more, though,
Isla noted.
See this island right next to it? It's got a bunch of tall, upside-down V's scratched onto it. If I understand orc symbolism, which, believe me, is not that hard, then I think they are saying this is an island full of mountains, and with it being so close to the other island, which is also ringed by tall mountains...
Then most of the island is probably shrouded in shadow. I nodded. Hence the bioluminescent plants.
Exactly.
Isla grinned.
It's the perfect conditions for what Morella described, and it appears to be not that far away.
I'd estimate it's a day or two worth of sailing.
Mira spoke up.
Without any issues, of course.
Then that settles it. We're going to set sail for the glowing island as soon as possible.
Not to sound rude,
Rikuri grumbled.
But is that the only reason you called us all out here? Just so you could announce you were leaving?
I understood the frustration. Had that been the case, this would have literally been the definition of a this-could-have-been-an-email meeting. So I elaborated further. I called you all out here today because I need a crew, and I wanted to know who wished to come along. Now, I know Tyrion, Jonas, and Nadir are coming because Morella saw them in her vision.
Excuse me? Don't I get a say in this?
What? I asked the Silver Dragon telepathically. Do you want to stay behind?
Of course not, but I wanted to make the decision for myself, thank you very much.
Of course I'm going,
Nadir chuckled.
Lezan is too. A Kunag woman must remain around her mate during pregnancy or else we'll go absolutely crazy.
Please,
Nerissa practically begged.
Let them go with you.
What about anyone else? I looked around at my friends. George, you coming along on this one, big guy?
I'm afraid not, dear one. If it is all right with you, I wish to remain back here with Nixie for the time being. I've had a lot of excitement these last few weeks.
Nixie?
Mira put her hands on her hips.
Is this just because you want George to watch the children for once?
No!
Mira's pink water dragon declared.
Oh, it's just, he's been gone for so long.
Say no more. I held up my hand to cut off Nixie. If you miss your partner, then I'm not going to be the one to stand in the way. It's all right.
Could Charin come along, Dad?
Morella asked hopefully.
She's never been off the island before, and I know she's been begging to come along on one of our adventures.
Is that so? I raised an eyebrow at my daughter. Because when you say our adventures, that seems to imply you...
Yes, Dad.
Morella rolled her violet eyes.
I'm going too.
Just so we're clear, George, Nixie, is that all right?
Yes!
Both of the adult water dragons blurted out at once. Charin, however, was not amused.
I didn't even ask yet.
The purple-scaled dragon harumphed.
Are you just trying to get rid of me?
Of course not,
George reassured his daughter. But then he turned to me with a huge smile and a wink.
While you're at it, dear one, do you want to take Malky too?
Hey!
Malky pouted, and then he shot a bit of water at his father. Great. Now George had unlocked the power of the dad joke.
You know it's not even a question with me,
Mira reminded me. It definitely wasn't. Mira had accompanied me on every single voyage I'd ever been on, and she wasn't about to break the streak now. So, we had two soothsayers, a water dragon, a fire dragon, a deadly dragonkin warrior, and two crazed raccoon women. That sounded like a pretty badass crew, but we could always use a few more people to round out the team. Any other takers? I've got a feeling this is going to be our most exciting journey yet.
Yes.
Rikuri chuckled.
Who wants to go along with the Draco Rex to a dark island where there's most likely a fire-breathing dragon waiting for us?
Well, when you put it that way,
Ashanti mused.
Count me in.
Rikuri's mouth fell open as she looked at the three-horned rhino woman.
That was meant to be sarcasm. You actually want to go?
Timbori's tusks, I do.
The Chero with the shaved head grinned and held her head high.
You'd have to be crazy not to want to go on such a death-defying mission.
Well, consider me insane, then.
Rikuri held up her hands in concession.
I'm coming, too.
Awara interjected.
As much as I've loved staying on this island, it's too peaceful. I feel like a good adventure is just what I need to break out of these monotonous ways.
Translated, Awara needed a break from Dalwin for a while. That was fine. The orange-winged Morpho would be an excellent addition to the crew. All right, then. That's probably good enough for...
Don't forget about me, Ben.
The pale, dark-haired Theora stepped forward.
I've been practicing my archery skills, and I think I might just be ready to go out and fight with you once more.
We've already got an archer.
Ashanti chuckled.
And, sister, I can assure you, you're not as good as me.
I would gladly put my skills up against yours.
Theora mused as she narrowed her eyes at the Chero woman.
I can now hit a spine fruit from a distance of nearly 50 feet away.
Oh, 50 feet!
Ashanti teased, though I assumed it was all in good fun.
Have you tried to hit one from atop a running Mirak while the tiny little fruit is in motion, too?
We can have two archers, Ashanti, I promised the Chero woman. In fact, the more we have, the merrier.
What about Huar and I?
Zamwe suggested. I think it's for the best if Huar and you stay on this island for now. As much as I could use a few more dragons, I think Charon and Tyrion will be able to get us out of any problems we run into.
If that is what you wish, then so be it.
Zamwe bowed atop her land dragon. Now, Swaer and Batari, on the other hand, I looked over to the Queen Mother. A small, inconspicuous wind dragon would help with our journey immensely, especially if all doesn't go well with the fire breather we're looking for on this island.
Then consider your wish granted.
Batari smiled with glowing eyes.
Swaer and I will join you too.
We're all good then, I think. I sighed and turned to the rest of my friends. As for the rest of you, I want you to be on high alert. Things seem to be ramping up around this world lately. Especially with all these new dragon species the Cheros have told us about. And the fact the orcs are getting more and more brash by the day. Not to mention we've got another issue on our hands. One I'm hoping our new Chero friends can help us figure out. I explained to my subjects how I was concerned our resources were on the skids. Especially with all the new people and creatures we were bringing into the fold. I told them that for the first time in my tenure as the Draco Rex, I didn't know what we needed to do. And I wanted them to think it over while I was gone. In the meantime, though, I said I wanted them all to listen to Zikiyu's suggestions, as she was the mastermind behind the incredible Chero village we'd encountered back on their island. With that lingering question still fresh on their minds, I sent them all away and ordered the Dragon Queen to be stocked with supplies for our journey. From there, it was a long, back-breaking day of work. We spent the next 6 hours loading up our schooner ship with the proper rations, weapons, and any equipment we thought we might need on our journey to the glowing island. Since it was going to be one of our shorter trips, we packed enough food and supplies to last us about a week. As long as we didn't get blown off course, that should be more than enough to keep us going. Finally, the next morning arrived, and it came time to head out. When I arrived down at the main shore of our island, I found all of the volunteers waiting for me, along with their respective queens.
Are you sure about this, Ashanti?
Batari warned her loyal subject one last time.
Once we set sail, we're not turning around. I'm more than ready, Queen Mother. Though I see you didn't bring your Mirak along.
I don't need to.
Batari shrugged and pointed to Swaer.
I've got all the companionship and protection I could need right here. Wait until you're getting chased down by a giant fire-breathing dragon. I don't think you can just hop on Swire's back for a quick getaway. And you think your Mirak will provide a quick getaway? If the soothsayer's correct, then we could be dealing with a full-size fire breather here. If that's the case, then I don't see how any of us would be able to outrun the thing. Not me with Swaer, not you with your Mirak, and not this orange-domed woman over here with her pretty wings.
My name is Awara. Though my hair may be orange, please don't let that be the only characteristic you define me on.
What would you prefer to be known by, then? Are you as skilled with that strange weapon of yours as Kandara was with hers?
Better.
A smile spread up Awara's thin lips.
I'm the one who taught her how to use the fan blade in the first place.
Then I can't wait to see you in action.
Ashanti smirked. Alrighty then. I whistled as I looked the crew over one last time. Whew. All of us are here. All lucky number 13 of us. Damn. Are one of you ladies sure you don't want to come along, too? Having 13 crewmates is, like, really bad luck in the sailing world.
My people need me here, Ben.
Narissa chuckled.
Besides, I don't know how to fight at all, so I'd just be a liability.
I know how to fight.
Dalwin shrugged.
But Awara knows how to fight much better than I do. Also, I told Zikiyu I would help her organize the new palace layout.
New palace layout? I raised an eyebrow at the yellow-haired babe. I'm not going to come back to find all my stuff has been shoved into a broom closet, will I?
Your quarters won't be touched.
Dalwin reassured me.
Though that is about the only place I can promise won't be changed.
And you signed off on all this? I turned to Narissa.
Zikiyu has some very intuitive ideas. I know I can be a tad traditionalist at times, but she has a way with words that really speaks to me.
Yeah, She has a tendency to woo people with her words. I once watched her talk to another Chero woman into eating a piece of Widehorn hoof, all because we bet her she couldn't do it.
We said our goodbyes to our queens before we turned around, boarded the ship, and took our positions in our various places. I slid behind the wheel, while Nadir and Lazan manned the front masts, and Mira handled the main sails. And all the while, Theora tried to teach the Chero women how to raise and lower the smaller masts at my command. Once everybody was in place and comfortable with their assigned tasks, I ordered my crew to raise the anchor and drop the sails, and we began our journey to the island of Bioluminescence. "Hold on!" I called out with a gasp when we were only about 2 minutes into our journey. "We forgot the most important thing of all."
"What's wrong, Ben?"
Mira responded.
"Did we forget supplies?"
"No!" I smiled at the green-haired dragonkin. "We haven't raised the colors yet." Mira grinned from ear to ear as she turned back to the center mast, sauntered over to it, and then grabbed onto the ropes. I watched as the golden-scaled woman jumped up into the air and used her body weight to pull the rope downward. And as she did so, our Jolly Roger raised up the wooden pole until it caught the wind and fluttered like the beacon of strength it was. We sailed along for hours without so much as a single issue. The wind remained at our back for most of the journey, and the waters were calm. Every now and again, a strange creature would pass in the sky overhead or swim beside our ship for a moment before realizing it wasn't a threat. Soon enough, the sun began to set, and night fell across the ocean. Even though we couldn't see beyond what the light of the bright crescent moon illuminated, we pushed onward. We all slept in shifts, with Mira taking over the wheel whenever I wanted to catch a quick hour or two of shut-eye. On my third nap of the night, however, I was awakened by the sound of multiple loud, startled gasps. My eyes shot open as I sprang to my feet and fumbled at my sword. I darted forward across the deck as I drew my blade and prepared for whatever deadly adversary had surprised us in the night. I let out a sigh of relief when I saw there was no threat. However, there was something even better. All of my crewmates were standing at the bow of the Dragon Queen and staring off into the horizon, and as I approached, I saw exactly what had caused such a powerful reaction. Far out across the watery landscape, I saw a bright neon light. It was very minuscule for the moment, but its turquoise light acted like a beacon in the darkness, just begging for us to follow it. "Is that what I think it is?"
"The glowing island,"
Mirella confirmed with a smile.
"We made it, Dad.